best new tech and the hottest techniques on ice. You're listening to Iced Up with Andrew Gullickson and Luke Lemire. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. This is Season 4, Episode 11. I'm Andrew Gullickson, sitting alongside Luke Lemire in the Blackberry Man Cave.
Iced Up is brought to you by Stryker and Beavertail Bait.
Oh, what a week, Luke.
You a little tired there, buddy?
Oh, man. It's been a good week. It's been a good season, and I don't think this is going to be our last episode yet. I don't think. But
not quite sure yet.
If it was my last time out on ice today, I've had enough. For a season. I've had enough amazing days, and just time after time I'm like, that's the best trip I've ever had with people, with the way things have went. Enough times that I'm like ready to just make it one for the memory book.
And there's a lot of our listeners that, like you said, if it was the last time out, I could call it good. There's people that listen to us that haven't even hit ice yet this year.
Right. And there's several that their last time out was 2 weeks ago already.
Yeah. I mean, if you are on anything with social media, paying attention to anything, I mean, there was a NBC Nightly News did a little 5 minute, not even 5 minute spiel on one of the end of their shows. I think it was last week, where they were on Mille Lacs talking to a certain resort owner about how it was going and what this weather has been doing for everything for the ice season. I think they, don't quote me on this, but I want to say that it was in the last five to 10 years, I want to say, the average ice season has been cut down by 24 days.
Yeah, it's been a lot less. We've talked a lot of weather. We've talked a lot about the way this ice is just weird this year. And it kind of is in a way every year, but this year has been different than we expected. But I'll say I've been on ice since, with just a couple days off, pretty much since before Christmas. There was like 1 4 to 5 day stretch where I couldn't take anybody out, and I still found some ice to go stand on myself. Most of the time it was just to get out on it. But we've been very fortunate, this little corner of Wisconsin here, where we've had some pretty decent ice, really.
We have. And I think another thing that gets people kind of spooked in this is that, once again, social media presence.
Social media, yeah, 100%. Is that
it's not safe, it's not safe, it's not safe. And then people look at that and don't even go out. I mean, this was a year that, like you said, you got very familiar with your spud bar this year, which was a year that you need to be able to do that. But at the same time, don't listen to what everybody's saying on social media. Go out and check conditions for yourself to be able to get out, because if you're listening to social media, you wouldn't have gotten out at all this year.
Yeah, you wouldn't have fished at all. No matter, you could live in Canada, you probably wouldn't have wanted to go near a lake because you thought it was thin.
Nope, you're gonna fall through. It's gonna suck. Don't risk it. It's not worth it. I mean, we talked about this a million times this season, especially. Do your due diligence on everything, but realistically, even with the weather we have coming up in our little corner of the world here, the biggest thing you're going to have to worry about right now is probably shorelines opening up.
Yeah.
And then coming after that, they're going to lock right back up again, according to the forecast.
Yeah, it looks like it.
But the ice that's actually on the lake right now, it's not bad. I mean, we were on 9 inches on Thursday.
Yep. And it's lake to lake today. I was on 4.5, but also very good ice. Like, I drove Snowdog out on it for miles, and it was about 4.5 to 6, and it was really, really good ice. And
bet you were happy to have the Snowdog out for once.
Yeah.
Not open it. Right. With everything behind you.
That Snowdog has really, really helped me this year. And that's something. So talking about the Snowdog and just kind of giving my review on it now after a second year. So after last year, I was like, man, as a guide, sometimes I work, I had two of them. Like, sometimes I feel like I work this thing like a dog. Like, it's getting almost too much workout for the size of the machine and everything. And then we have a year like this year where, man, I would have had to cancel a lot of trips and just not even fished myself much if it wasn't for having a 350-pound machine.
Correct. Where
if it can't go on the ice, I shouldn't be on the ice, even if you're only 280.
Right.
It's just, it's been a machine. You've seen, or if you've been paying attention to all of my stuff, I've pulled a ton of stuff out there, thousands of pounds.
I counted all, me and my dad counted them because I saw your reel come through and I showed it to him. I think we counted it was 9 to 11 sleds you had hooked on.
Yeah, packed. And today I did, they had three, I had three, so six sleds, me and three guys.
Yeah.
And I pulled it. No, that was no problem. I did put some redneck studs on there.
Hard to believe with you.
I got a couple hex head screws in there just to get a little bit of ice scratching, because otherwise it was getting really hard on the track just spinning trying to get going.
That's the other thing with our ice conditions right now. We've had warm days right now, but it does drop into the low 20s, higher teens at night that we've had for probably the last, I'd say, 5 days, let's call it.
Yep. Which has been really, really good for the ice, because it, as far as not melting, because it gets to 40 during the day, kind of melts the surface, and then it freezes back up.
It's a slop hole while you're out there during the day. It's wet, but when you walk out in the morning, then it's rock solid.
Yep.
But the thing is, it there's not a stick of snow on it. Creepers are a must right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's, unless you feel like visiting the emergency room, because you know you're going to end up on your, here comes a rotator cuff, here comes me falling on my head, I landed on my tailbone, I can't go to work. I mean,
even with creepers on today, with that water coming up the hole and just like trying to rush and basin chase a little bit today, this blackberry is definitely medicinal.
Yeah, I mean,
probably got a prescription.
And that's the other thing. The style of creeper that you get nowadays, too, makes a world of difference. I mean, I got for Christmas, I think, 3-4 years ago. I had never used them, was a set of Yak Tracks. And I'd have to look at the box to see which ones I have. But I had never used them because there was enough on there where I was not worried about slipping and falling the entire time. My dad and I went out fishing yesterday, and you looked at the lake, and it was nothing. It looked like a hockey rink.
Was perfect glass. Yeah,
I'm like, this, nope, these things are going on. And we're pulling our shmini sleds out, which is another thing that we'll talk about this episode, is with those creepers, like, you're on the HD rubber strap-ons where you just have the cleats on the front of your toe.
They have middles and a little bit of back now. They're better than they used to be.
Okay.
But they're not, they're still a little short, I think, and they're rubber coated.
Oh, see.
So you got to break through them. They were pretty good. Like, I was scratching with every step. But when you hit that water coming up, we were chasing.
Yeah.
You get that water coming up the hole and it just butter.
Yeah. And that's the way it's been this year, too. I mean, we've said, anything you listen to on social media, podcasts, whatever, we're on either First Ice number 17 or we're on Last Ice number six.
Yep. It keeps coming and going and coming and going. And I've fallen into the trap of like, man, I don't know if I should go. Should I be canceling trips? And I'm like, I've got 11 inches of ice, but is it good ice? Like,
yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. I did, like, it's 11 inches of ice. I can't break through it with a spud bar, no matter, you know, in 8 blows. Like, yes, we still got good ice. And just one thing that I kind of have always felt, but this year I said multiple times and truly believe, is do not trust ice that you have not put your own spud in.
Correct. And know your spud.
And know your spud. We've talked about that, but go put your spud on the ice before you step on it. And yeah, like I said, just don't trust it based on anybody else's. There's a lot of people out there asking, and I have even reached out to people in certain areas to say, like, hey, how is the ice sheet? Is it decent out there? And people get sick of those questions on Ice Junkies and different other Facebook things.
Right.
Like Ice Fishing Wisconsin, ice, you know, whatever state you're in. But that's a good place to start. Like, hey, is it even worth me coming up there and spotting? And that, you know, that's a fair question and people should answer it.
Right. You still get some of the dang offs that are just on there to cause problems.
Yep. But at the same time, even if it is a yes or a no or anything, you're really going to have to get there and A, make that decision what's safe for you.
Right.
And B, put your own spot on it because every step is different.
Correct.
We've seen that when we were checking ice. I've heard about it. I mean, all the time people go through where they didn't check.
I took my spud bar I made this season because I couldn't find one to buy in this area. I took it with a week ago today to go spud my way onto a lake, and I knew it was decent ice, but I was worried about going over 30 to 40 foot holes of how that ice would be. So
yep.
I tried it out, and I was waiting for my dad to get there, so I went and chopped to try and get a hole in there, and I'm making good cracks at it just to be able to get accustomed to see
does it cut, what's your depth, if you're 1 pound, where are you getting to, that sort of thing.
Yep, doing all that. So I got it figured out for the ice we had. I want to say it was 7.5 inches. It took me, I think it was 5 good solid throwing my weight into it, wax to get through. I'm like, all right. So I knew what I was getting into going out. So it was, and we need to do a little customizing on it because I made this enough for Yao Ming to be able to go. He can walk out with it. I got to do a little trimming on this thing. But yeah, it was, I still had it out there. I mean, and it was blowing 35. It was cold. I mean, it just felt like ice fishing season.
Right. It kind of does finally feel like ice fishing season. It's been, you know, more in the teens, 20s, and low 30s, like we normally have in a December.
Right.
And the fish have finally kind of come around to like a midwinter lull with no ice. It's just crazy. Like maximum of 9 inches of ice that I've seen around the area.
Yeah.
But the fish have just started acting, unfortunately, like they should.
Yeah.
It's just much slower, much more just ignoring everything. They're just trying to exist at this point.
Yeah, I went out yesterday, and it was god-awful.
That pressure's been rising.
Yeah, I've been very much this season checking pressures before I go out, especially the day before, just to see what I can get into. And I saw the pressure was going to be high, and the pressure is going to be rising. I'm like, ooh, this is going to be a tough bite to begin with. And you usually run across that and keep an eye on that for pan fishing. Your game fish, they'll do what they want to do.
Sometimes.
And it was one of those days where on a lake that you usually get, we had 4 boards out, and you'd at least pull a snake or a bass coming out of there. And we didn't have a flag on this lake. I'm like, you've got it. What is going on?
Yeah, I think there's a combination of all the sunlight going in because we lost all our snow again, and it's been bright, sunny skies. Typical late ice where you get those. But it's been bright, sunny skies, which always makes tip-up fishing for me a little bit harder. And then I think part of that is the bluegills don't come out and roam around in the mud. They're hugging tight to cover.
And see, that was the thing that screwed with us, too, is that we've had, like you said, we've had sun for 4 out of the 5 days during working week, Monday through Friday.
Yep.
The Friday we fished, we finally got overcast.
Oh, that's right.
It wasn't sun to be found. We were supposed to get sun in the afternoon.
But that pressure was
and
crazy.
We did. And I think we were out there at, we now get out there incredibly early. I think we were popping holes at 8. And I think we fished till 2:30, And the only thing we got is my old man caught a 2.5-inch crappie.
Yeah, it's just it's been a tougher few days. On some lakes that have been real producers and really on fire, all of a sudden we went to, like, you're trying like heck to pull 10 nice panfish a day. Today, I was back in the basin. I would say my last two trips, including the one with you,
yep,
and your dad and a couple of our longtime listeners, were out on a guide trip with me. And that was a little less basin-y because the crappies were relating to bottom. We got out of our normal stomping grounds a little bit, got up north, and got some gin clear water to play with. And crappies were close to bottom, but still kind of a basin scenario. We were chasing them, live scoping, and that was more like sharpshooting, I would say, than basin chasing, per se.
Yeah, we ended up doing sharpshooting towards probably the quote-unquote midday lull to be able to get on them. And you got a knack of not keeping the rod out of your hands when you need to.
I didn't fish very much at all that day.
No, you didn't. The two times you had a rod in your hands, both times you go, guys, I'm sorry.
Jay, just because you couldn't catch any big fish that day.
Yeah.
Your dad did.
My dad did.
Yeah.
And I was, I think, and looking back at that day, yeah, I think I got 2 or 3, probably close to 13. They were 12 and whatever.
Nice fish.
Which are respectable fish. But we were out with two longtime listeners, two repeat customers for you.
Yep.
And me and my dad were out, and I was, for me, it was more a part of seeing, after that trip, I can see why you guide, because I had more enjoyment going to help them.
It's pretty cool.
Getting set up. If one was sitting there and not getting anything, I just set my stuff down. I'm like, are you marking anything? Are you doing anything like this? Well, no, I'm not getting anything. Am I right? Let me grab a scope and see if I can find something and try and get you on something. So that way you're at least getting fish. I go, there's a chance there could be gills, but, and Gene was the gill queen while we were out there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty special. And I'm the type of person, I really just like seeing the fish come up. I mean, it's cool to catch one. And if everybody else is catching one and you're not, you definitely feel a little bit like, okay, now I gotta get one myself. But other than that, I just like seeing them come up. So I really want to see people just make their day and catch some big fish.
And like you said, it was on that gin clear water, so it was cool because there was a couple times, like, you helped my dad with his two big ones that he got.
Yeah.
And then I went over for, he was pulling, they were pulling up. Oh, that's a nice fish. And then we were saying, well, it's only 12 and whatever. I'm like 12 and a half, 12 and three quarters. Oh, it's 12 and 7/8. And you're sitting there listening to this podcast going, I haven't caught one that big this year yet.
Yep.
And we had a special day on a special lake to be able to get out there. And with that gin clear water looking down the hole and watching it do the spins coming around, it's like, oh, come on, get up here.
Yeah, you can see it. Even today, I was on a pretty clear lake, and just with that winter water, you could see down about 15 feet, and it's just the biggest magnifying glass you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So we were catching like 9s and 10s today. We didn't, with this pressure, we just didn't get in. We had a couple 11-inch fish, but we just didn't get into the bigger size that we normally do. But when you're looking down 15 feet through water, I'm like, oh, here comes a big golden pie plate. Like, this is a good one. And it's like, oh, he's 7 inches.
Yeah, exactly. That damn magnifying glass always gets you.
But no, and then when they are huge, it's like, holy crap. All right. Yeah, just keep reeling. It's good. It's all right.
Yep, exactly. It's been an unusual year. It's been a lot of, and for you, I actually talked about this with your clients on the ice. For you, I think it did you good to get out of your comfort zone, because your bread and butter is going to basin chase. You got forced this year into getting into skinny water where you could get on ice, and it changed what you did. You got more into perch. You got more into different species outside of your basins of what you do. And you did more game fish this year than you've ever done since you started guiding.
Well, and we talked goals this year, and you mentioned last week you had some goals that you didn't really bring up, or, you know, didn't kind of come to you when we were talking goals. But a big one of mine this year was just, I've been fishing the same area. I rarely fish the same lake that many times, but the same area for the last 3 years. This year was like, I'm going somewhere else. I've just caught these fish. Somebody brought it up on Ice Fishing Wisconsin recently. Like, do you ever get sick of catching the same fish out of the same lake? It's like, no, I don't, because I could change lakes. And this year, though, was, I'm going to drive. I'm going to get out of the area and fish different water, fish water that I wanted to fish, fish stuff that I used to fish when I was younger, and do some different stuff. And this year forced the issue, because this is the first real opportunity that I had basin chasing today, and it might be my last trip. I almost had a little bit before Christmas, and then, you know, trips didn't work out, and rain came and ruined all the ice anyways.
Yeah.
So, I haven't really missed that side of things, or missed, you know, fishing that area. I'm still going to look at some new stuff next year.
Right.
And I think, like you say, that's a huge part of being a better angler, is there's definitely something to dialing in a lake and having something like today, where I know conditions are terrible going in. We got a full moon. We got super high pressure. We have not a cloud in the sky and no snow. And, you know, people that want crappies, you better know where you're going if you're a guide, because those are awful conditions for a lot of different things. They're really good.
They're awful conditions for just fishing in general.
Most of the time. There's a couple situations that might be good for. So you better know your lake. And that's why, like, I went back to a piece of water that I was really familiar with, because I knew it was going to be tough. And there is something to be said for, like, if you fish a place all the time, you can really dial it in and know it.
Right.
But you also know those fish. You know what the top end is going to look like. You know what the smaller fish are going to look like. You know where they're going to be. And it definitely gets a little bit stale.
Yes, it does.
And when you're learning a new lake, and I got the opportunity this year to be on one of those spots that you actually find the spot, and it's a magic piece on a lake, and you're the first one to ever find it and get on there. And no matter whether it was the perch bite we were on this year, or crappies, or walleyes, the first time you hit something that people haven't found, there's no day that's going to be that good again.
Exactly.
It might come back at some point, like in a year or in months, if it stays secret. But if you fish it the first time and it's amazing, even if you give it a couple weeks, come back, it's never going to be quite as good. So that kind of I don't know, that feeling, or the way that all works in the game of finding fish, is pretty special. So that was a really, really cool part of this year, was being able to do the map study, put in the work on a lake, and get into some really crazy fish that hadn't been fished before.
And going back to what you said about map study, doing your map studies, I mean, that's things that, like, I got out quite a bit this year compared to the last 4 years, and had more opportunities to get out this year. We just didn't have the ice. But that's what, if I wasn't on the ice, I had my Lake Map, my One Boat Network app, open on my phone and just going and looking at stuff and dropping pins on places I want to try. I just open it up. I'm like, well, I know that I've been on this lake a ton, but it's one of those lakes that it frustrates me to no end, because it shouldn't be this hard, but it is. And you just start dropping pins in different places, and then you blow up the area and be like, all right, I want to go and try this lake maybe once. If pressure's right, if everything lines up, you just start dropping pins and looking at stuff, and you just really start studying maps to be able to figure stuff out, be able to get onto, maybe you're lucky enough to be able to get out in the boat during the summertime to be able to try the lakes then, and right before lockup hits, be able to try them to be able to pin them for the wintertime.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about location this year because it's really important. And we've talked apps. One thing that has come up, I've seen a lot, is people looking at the apps, and like Navionics has went up. Subscriptions are ending and they're going up to like $48.99, somewhere like that, for the Navionics app, which has been the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And for most of the area, as Bart told us early in the year, One Boat Network and the Lake Master maps are way better. However, there's some lake. Yeah, it depends on the lake. And in our particular area, a lot of them aren't mapped on Lake Master, or the Navionics map is newer.
Correct.
So what people got to realize too is that you don't have to pay for like Navionics. I just have the free version. You can't manipulate colors and you can't do as much with it, but you can refer to it when the one boat network, because I subscribe to one boat. When that one doesn't have the map, I've still got it in Navionics, and I can kind of flip back and forth. I can lay my waypoints in one boat, but still see contours better in Navionics.
Correct.
And I can still lay waypoints there. I just basically can't color shade and do some of the fancy features.
Yeah, because like for one of the lakes that you and I fish quite a bit, or normally on this year, I actually haven't been on that lake this year, but... Cribs are another thing that don't come up, and that's one of the things that I relied on that for the last 2 years.
On the Navionics, they've got a lot of the cribs on there already, because they've got kind of like a network sharing or a big share where you can add it on and everybody can see it.
Right.
And they've been put on there by probably the Lake Association or somebody that fishes the lake all the time.
Exactly. And in the free version, you don't get that. Once you pay your damn near $50 for it.
I believe you do.
No.
Oh, you don't anymore.
No.
I'll take a look.
At least it didn't when I looked at, because my subscription ran out and I looked at that lake and all the cribs were gone.
Well, I'll have to take a... I'm going to pull it up right now.
And I hope you make me a liar out of it, because if that's the case, that'd be great, because that's one of the things, because there's some nice cribs on that lake where I can pull some decent gills off of. Really? It comes up on yours.
Yep, it's on there. So, cribs are still on there, and you can transfer, but you have to go through all the work of transferring them to One Boat Network.
Right.
Or you can just keep your Navionics app on the phone. So that's one thing that people have talked about, like, oh, you don't have to subscribe to Navionics. It's free.
Son of a bitch, they are.
See, I told you.
I don't know what the hell happened on the first time I looked at this, because
BlackBerry may have been involved.
Well, there's a solid possibility with that, especially if I got done with work and I was dealing with my son. I guarantee BlackBerry was involved.
So, no, they're still on there, so you can use that. And then One Boat Network on the lake that we're talking about right now, One Boat Network has a better lake map, has a much newer one. It's been edited a lot more, and it's got some new spots that like I want to try, but it doesn't have the crib. So now you've got both. You got the best of both worlds. If you keep the free one, and the one boat, you can flip back and forth and get to the spot you want, and also refer to where the cribs are.
Yep. So, exactly. Especially if you're on water already.
Yep.
And pull it up. If you're looking at a point on or area on one boat, you can just be on lake, switch back over to Navionics and see if there, for this lake in particular, if there's a crib within the area, you'll be able to get within it, and then you still got to deal, because even when they drop where the crib is on here.
Yeah, there's always a little bit of bounce and a little bit of like.
You'd still be off by 3 to 5 feet, and you still got to do a low, and that's being generous on some of these, just to be able to go and drill and be able to find it.
But, yep. Just blew your mind over there.
Son of a bitch. Yeah. I don't know what the hell happened last time I looked at it, and they weren't there. I'm like, well, this sucks.
Yep. Yeah. You thought you had to spend $50 to see cribs again, but nope.
Nope, they're there. No,
all those shared files are there. So,
that just still blows my mind. All right. Anyway.
So, Yeah, that kind of sums up anyways. We've talked a lot about the spots and how you get there. We've talked about everything from choosing lake and starting out and how to break down a brand new lake.
Right.
To using your app and finding those specific spots. But what it comes down to is just drilling a lot of holes because looking around, whether it's just regular sonar, that's how we always used to do it.
Yep.
Or you can speed up the process and go forward facing.
Right.
It goes a lot faster. There's no map that has that much detail. You can auto chart your own map.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get out there in the fall or anytime during the summer and get on with the boat. But like guys like you don't get to do it. I don't get out that much in the summer. I get a little bit of time to mark cribs and stuff, which tend to be helpful some days. But, you know, what it comes down to is basically just going and putting another hole in and checking the depth.
No, but and for me, we've even said this year that I'm usually the base camp guy going spread out from there and everything else. Like we mentioned, like I talked about in 2 or 3 episodes ago, whatever it was. For me, I killed a 10 amp and half of a 5 and had 160 holes in, which is saying something in the amount of ice we have on a 6-inch bit. I mean, I went out and that says something to being where you knew you had to be out there and I was, you know, your days are limited. So I'm popping the holes. I'm sweating my ass off. I'm getting this done to be able to go and find fish because I don't know how many more days I have to be able to get on the ice. And that even ties into like your harvest. Like I probably kept more fish this year than I normally do because I don't know if I'm going to be able to get back out again.
Yeah. Yeah. Your dad said the same thing.
Yep.
Probably kept a couple more because this might be my last trip. Yeah.
Yep. He goes, I kept a couple more than I usually do and a couple more than I usually want to clean because especially if you have a full day on the ice that 25 fish limit, if somebody keeps 25 fish, you're usually going, why did I do this? But at this, the way we've been shaping up this year, it's to the point, I don't know if I'm getting back out again. I'm getting my fish because, like we were talking about before, you're not able to get out during summertime. And for me, the fish through the ice just tastes better. They're firmer. It does taste better.
For sure. And you mentioned I got out doing a lot more predator fish than I ever have. Last year was kind of the year of the walleye for me, I'll call it, where
yep.
I was focused on them. I was catching them, getting them on a jigging rod, tip ups, and obviously we got them to the show. We got yours. I was after walleye specifically this year. It was walleyes. It was pike. It was bass. Caught a ton of them. And kept more pike than I probably ever have either. Got
right.
really good at doing a 5 fillet. Basically, even if you don't want a 5 fillet a northern, if you take off that top back strap,
yep,
it makes everything pretty obvious as to where you got to make your next cut.
Yep, just doing a little finger feel on them and everything
yep.
else. And if you're well known with a northern for the anatomy of it, you'll be able to just pick them out by look. But yeah, it's been a good year for that.
Yeah, I can count, but we've had a ton of 33 plus northern this year, which I mean only me and Brantley kind of tag teamed one that was 34. That's probably the biggest I personally caught. We just had a 38 though caught. I actually didn't even get to see it because I was up running. I had a group where I had two guys that were hardcore. They're going to stick their back in the wind all day. It was nasty windy and catch most of the panfish for the whole group.
Yeah. Okay.
And two guys that were going to sit in the shack and wander out every once in a while and catch some whatever came through the shack. And the shack guys were back and caught the biggest northern. We caught one on a tip up later. So we had a 33 and a 38 that day.
And for Wisconsin, those are solid fish.
Yeah, those are really nice fish. That 38 just pretty a good fish anywhere, even northern Minnesota, Canada. That's a good one.
Yes.
Getting trophy-ish here in Wisconsin. So,
another thing I want to get onto here is with the conditions that we've had this year, a lot of the people that ice fish this area rely on their machines to be able to get out on the ice, whether it be the four-wheeler, snowmobile, and God forbid we actually get ice thick enough again to be able to put a vehicle on.
Right. Or quad.
Yep.
Side by side.
So you had to adapt this year. I mean, there's very few lakes you could put an ATV on. My four-wheeler's not left my garage.
No, there's been enough ice sometimes, but only in some areas, and it's inconsistent and just not really worth the risk.
Not even remotely close. So a lot of us have been putting in the miles on our legs getting out, and a thing to be able to help do that is building yourself a Schmee sled. I mean, it works out great. The skis, you only have 4 inches between the two skis, so about 2 inches apiece on each ski to be able to haul out across there. And even when there's no snow on the ice, even on the ice, it makes it so much easier pulling this stuff around. So if you haven't built yourself one, I definitely recommend it. There's thousands upon thousands of plans out there to be able to build one. The ones that my dad and I have break down to be able to put in the back of your truck, which is even better. So that way you're not worrying about taking up all the room and another big thing to be able to bring with you. I hauled out damn near everything I do behind the four-wheeler this year on this sled, and I didn't even know it was behind me.
Yeah. We just recently had a good walk out on a place I couldn't get the snow dog into. And man, it definitely seemed like a hell. I should have pulled it around a little bit just to feel, but pulling the full sled, especially if you have anything other than Otter, there might be some other ones that are good, so I shouldn't maybe pigeonhole it, but the Otter sleds have a pretty good curve on them. They're still wide. They're still way heavier than a Schmitty sled.
Right.
But I know for a fact, because I've pulled a couple, and I've owned a couple of like clam shacks, they're built to be an amazing snowplow.
Yes, they are.
They do not pull well. They're great for pulling them behind machines. Some of their one-mans aren't too bad because they're light enough, but they have a real steep front edge, and they plow snow.
Right. Do you have any amount of snow on there? But even without the snow on there, just being able, because that wide sled dragging across bare ice is going to cause a lot of noise on there. Yeah,
it does.
So if you're able to go and put that up and put it onto downhill skis or even cross-country skis, my dad had cross-country skis. He cut them off and took the flat wheel and beveled them down on the back edge so that way it wasn't an aggressive point on there, and just do it that way. And I think minor downhill skis, which I like, he has the cross-country version, which the cross-country version have more of an arc in them.
Yep.
So that way when you put your weight on them, they go down. But depending on how much you're hauling out, that arc doesn't always hit. So then you're going from 2 solid points to 4 points.
Yeah, so even less. So, and there is kind of an interesting, like, point where it makes a difference, right? Because if you get, as you start piling up your snow, a wider ski is going to float you a little bit better.
Yep.
But you're getting more friction. A narrow ski, less friction, but all of a sudden you don't get that snowshoe effect, and now you're digging in a little bit more, which causes a little bit more friction. So it's always like, well, okay, what size do we use? And I would generally venture to more medium or bigger.
Right.
Because if there's no snow, I'm not as worried about it. It's still going to be better than.
But at the same time, if you went and built it at the same time, then If you go and just take some emery cloth and file down your high points, and then even if ever 95% of us have a propane torch in our garage, take that and some paraffin wax, rub paraffin wax on, melt it in. Don't get real crazy with your flame on there, and just glaze those skis over. The thing's going to run you down going across there.
Yeah, I would say even the narrowest cross-country ski is gonna definitely help make that smitty sled and be able to walk on. That's something that we usually don't have to worry about most of the season. And luckily enough, I have to give Snowdog its credit this year. And I don't mind doing so. It's been a great machine for me. I did see that they have made a lot of upgrades in their 2024 stuff. They actually came out with an electric one too, which has kind of been interesting.
Yeah.
I like electric stuff more and more as it's going out. I'm still not there on trucks and cars, but I love my auger, right? I like my lithiums for everything else.
I'm same with my locator and my auger.
Now the price point went way up on the Snowdog where it's just like, okay, I can't yet go to electric there. But they've got a pretty good range, just as good a range as gas, and they put a generator on it, so you can run the generator and charge while you're running. So I'm like, okay, range isn't an issue. And they upgraded a lot of their little things, because like the throttle on mine was a really poor. It was my mechanic actually
was comical for me one day.
My mechanic actually replaced my throttle with his daughter's bike brake.
Okay.
And it was a perfect match.
Oh, really?
Yep. But it's like pot steel or pot metal.
Okay.
It bends out pretty easy.
Pig iron?
Yeah, pig iron. It's cheap. So they've upgraded that. They put a tensioner on the chain, because before you had to move the one that I've got right now, the chain gets loose. I got to move the engine.
Oh, okay.
So they've upgraded some of that stuff and made a tensioner on there. So now there's just manual tensioner. You just tighten up the chain. They put better sprockets on, put a better chain on. They're starting to make them a little bit better. They just got them over here from overseas. So I'm hoping, and it sounds like the 2024s are coming with a lot of the good stuff. I'm hoping that they start putting stainless in them, because they're going to see water like every day, every time they're ever used. So I'm hoping that they go to a lot more stainless.
Or aluminum.
Or aluminum. Well, on the bolts and stuff, at least
stainless. Okay, for the hardware?
Yeah, hardware. Just at least stainless hardware.
Yeah, but stainless hardware makes sense.
Yep. So I hope they go to that and give us a little more premium product as far as those parts. But as far as what those things can do, we talked about it a little bit. I've just been really impressed. Dragging out a ton of weight on really thin ice without any problems whatsoever. And if you put studs on those things, they will pull a ton on glare ice. Literally, probably almost 2,000 pounds. So that's one. I've lived as a guide because of that. And I know there's a few guides I had to do, like had to cancel for a little while, because their ice was a little thinner than we had here. But then when they did get back on there and walk on only trips.
Yep.
Because they're running a four wheeler. And how many places could we do that this year? Very, very few.
Very few. I mean, I think there will have been once or twice after I got out there. If I was able to go back the next day,
I would have brought the
wheeler with.
Yep.
Yeah, just to save on the wear and tear and be able to get out there faster and be able to get stuff done, get to your spot, and being able to, even if you want to check a different area, to be able to get done.
Yeah. It's because it is so much speedier. Like, we didn't have it the other day, and I was like, oh, man, if I could, I would fish four more places if I had the Snowdog out.
Yep.
It definitely helps, but being efficient with how you pack things has been more and more, like, it's always important, but this year it's been crazy because you're pulling it yourself.
Yep.
And you got to fit everything in a Schmitty.
You're starting to look at cutting ounces, basically. It's almost like going, I won't put it to that extreme, but it's in the same ballpark of doing a backpack trip for hunting an elk.
Yeah. And you know what really was kind of cool to me was I took one trip where it was just, let's go scout mode. Me and a buddy, we're going to take one live scope, two flashers, minimum rods, and an auger, and go fishing. It was incredibly freeing to not have all the crap.
Yeah, and there's days where if you're able to do that, it's like, God, I wish I could go out like this every day. And
yeah.
Realistically, you could. But at the same time, it's almost a comfort blanket for some of the stuff that you do have.
Oh, it's nice. And another one of those like unspoken goals that I wanted to do this year was get out and ice camp and do our 24 that we've talked about. That we are hoping to do it, like really do it right next year.
Yeah.
Because there wouldn't have been, with this ice, there wouldn't have been an opportunity to really, between schedules and everything, to do it right this year.
Even if we don't do the 24 next year, you and I are doing an ice camp.
Yeah.
Where we can go out and hit a lake first part of the day, go and get hook set hand and get what we want to, and then just go and do one where we have an opportunity of a night bite to be able to get out there. And basically for us, it'd be a night away from the kids, night away from the wives, just be able to get out there and cook some food and listen to some music and just kind of chill and have a couple drinks. That'd be great. Just be able to get all the bugs worked out before we actually got into our 24-hour where and the 24-hour where we'd want to be set up in a decent area for the night. If we do it night, it'd be like, meh, we catch a fish, it'd be great. And 24-hour, like, we need to catch a fish this night.
Right. Yeah, it would be. It'd be pretty cool to get out there and shake the rust off on something like that. You've never done it. I've done one full night once. Twice. There was one time, but the very first time, I had one of the like sunflower heaters on a stand in a shack that I later sold you. It was a 2-man otter flip over.
Oh, that old green one?
Yep.
Okay.
The green lodge or cabin. It was a cabin.
The cabin.
It's like a 1¾ man.
I pull that, 1¾ man. That'd be about perfect. That's actually the sled I pull behind my four-wheeler now.
It runs on the otter medium. And so I went out at like 10. And I was going to stay out there till the crappies bit, which they did. And they bit well at 4 a.m.
Oh, boy.
So about 2 a.m, I had my, I was out with a buddy who had about 2. He walked back to the truck to go sleep. So I had my 3 lines out, tied one of my lines, and they were all in bobbers. I tied one of my lines, like, just wrapped it around my finger and fell asleep across the seats of that.
Oh, that my shack. God.
I was early 20s, so.
I could still
sleep in the sink back then. I fell asleep in a tub pretty easy and woke up to a crappie pulling on my finger, did the whole set the hook, roll off the seat, roll into the heater, almost start the shack on fire, still somehow did catch the, or burn the line. Still hand over handed the crappie though. So that was my first ice camping.
My back hurts thinking about laying that across 2 bucket seats or boat seats, basically. Oh my God.
So I did that. And then we did it the one night with Larry Smith where I was on a cot. Or actually that was on a, if you guys have an old sun chair, the one that has like a vinyl strip almost.
The vinyl tubes,
but they lay flat. They fold up nice, and they make an amazing cot. They really, really did. If you still have one, it's an awesome cot, and they're like really compact. I don't have any. The ones I used that time are now got like 2 sun faded and started snapping, but, and I haven't seen one for, I don't know, since the late 90s, sold in a store.
Right.
But if you have one of those, they make a really great ice camping cot. Super comfortable, actually.
That or the new school version of those is the zero gravity chairs.
Zero gravity. Yep.
Because those lay pretty damn flat when you get them all the way reclined back.
Yep. And then I've seen, I think it's disco beds or disco. Yeah. Yep. Something like that. I think that those would be awesome on ice. I know people have used those before, but great way to. Great. You definitely got to think about that aspect of it. As I've got to sleep, air mattress is going to be the coldest thing on earth, and it's going to go flat 100%.
Oh, God, go, yes.
It'll be flatter than flat.
Yeah, you might as well just lay on the ice.
Yeah, you might as well just sleep in a puddle. It'll be better.
And another thing with the ice camping scenario on that is whether you do the chair or the army cot or whatever, even though you're up off the ice, get the most minimalist sleeping pad you can get to put another little bit of a barrier there. Even though if you have a well-made sleeping bag, just a little bit more there, you're going to be so much more comfortable.
Yeah.
And actually looking in at that, just not for ice camping, but just for spending a day on a lake, I'm actually going to be looking at a power box next year.
Oh, yeah. That's something that I think you really only use, though, when you're camping.
To an extent, I mean, for some odd reason, say you forgot to get your locator fully charged the night before. If you have that, you have a backup, and if you have your locator set up for it, be able to just hook into that to be able to go and be able to finish out your day. Granted, it should be a cluster hauling two things around plus everything else, but at least it's a backup for it. Or cell phone charging, or like if you have a hub or a flip that the lights are integrated in, instead of putting a shelf in there with another battery that you got to bring, you're bringing a power box. You can hook the lights into the shack to be able to get your lights set up. And with a lot of ice camping, like the USB fans for hanging from the ceiling to be able to put your heat back down and everything else, there's a lot of uses for them. People trick them out where there's lights on the front of them and stuff like that. I mean, a power box is actually probably a good thing to have in your back pocket in the arsenal. Even if you leave the damn thing in your truck and you have a normal year where you can drive the wheeler out, or even if you can drive the pickup out there, at least you have it there as a backup to be able to use it for something.
Yeah, that's, I guess, well, so we talked about the Rapala one a little bit this year with Brian. He brought that in. They've got one. Obviously, there's Isohole Power.
Yep.
If you haven't checked those out, check that guy's got a sweet box. I have actually a
Dakota Lithium's got a nice power box out now too.
Yep. I have a shuttle that is actually pretty much a power box. I just got to add the battery to it, and I actually have the battery right now too. And so my arc light. So now there's a ton of things that you can get that offer power options for anything that charges USB. So like my Arc Lab shuttle.
Yep.
For my live scope, which has been probably my favorite buy, and I actually
That's a quality box, because when we were out on Thursday, I used your scope.
Yep.
And your client, it was actually fortunate enough to have one also. So me and my dad teamed up with your live, and then you used the client's, and that is an. And that wind tape, I can understand why you put that on there.
That wind grip tape is really nice.
Yeah, it's a nice, comfort, soft handle. And yeah, I can see when you said that you damn near took skin off with that.
Oh, yeah, it ripped. But that pack has been one of my best buys of this year, where they're expensive because I got it all wired up with battery. And they're like, I don't know, in the $400 range. I mean, it's not cheap with the battery and all.
All things considered, that's probably a drop in the bucket compared to everything else.
Right, when you're looking at live scope and all that. But I'm not worried about the thing falling apart. It's super comfortable and easy to use. It's got USB and 12-volt coming out the front of it. And it is so nice to not have to, like, find a wire and worry about your clips falling off or something to charge. Right on the side of it, it's got the plug for a lithium charger.
Oh, perfect.
And you just poop right in every day. And then it's got a voltage readout, which on lithium, I don't find all that helpful.
No, not on lithium.
It gives you a little bit of an idea that, okay, I'm getting down in the 12 volts. It's going to die at some point. But, yeah, they drop so fast that I guess it does give you a heads up. So I think I usually get down to like 11.9 before it shuts off.
Right.
And so for that, I'm running an Amped Outdoors 20 amp lithium.
Right.
Now, nobody gives us anything as far as batteries, not nope. associated in any way. Amped Outdoors, pretty good bang for your buck.
Yep.
Dakota Lithium, I think, can be a little bit better quality sometimes, but they're right there with Amped Outdoors. A little bit more expensive. They are assembled in the U.S., so they're providing some U.S. jobs. Norsk Lithium, I think, gives you a very, very premium at a very, very premium price. They build their USBs right into their battery. A lot of them have heaters. They're right. premium batteries, but you're paying like an extra 30%. But they're dang nice batteries. I usually don't have the budget for a Norsk, but that's the way I would go if I could.
I would say the same thing on that. A Norsk is just looking at everything because I have, what the hell do I have in mind? My Helix. I have a Lightning Lithium. They started out making e-bike batteries and everything else. And I have a 20 amp in my Helix 7 right now.
Okay. That sucker will run for a week.
No.
Oh, no.
Well,
that's true. Those Helix do burn a lot of battery.
There's a lot of battery in there. I mean, I have to go, if I leave my unit if I'm going to go jump and go do something else, I need to go put in standby mode.
Okay.
Just shut the screen down to be able to let everything just do so I have to go through the entire startup process again.
Right.
And with that being said, I think I bought the Helix 7 for the mere fact of when I had a boat, be able to take the head unit from the ice pack to my boat, so that way I'm not buying different electronics. I am going back to a Vexlar next year. I'm going to post it, sell it, be done with it. I'll sell it with the battery and everything just to be done. I mean, the battery's great. I mean, for a guy that could go out for maybe half to three quarters of a day, you don't have to worry about your maintenance on and your due diligence. But there's a little bit more lag time with the LCD screen on there than you do a traditional flasher, which you don't think would make a huge difference on it, but it really does when it comes down to bites.
Right.
I mean, I've gotten to learn my locator very well, but at the same time, I think if you're looking at what I did, going from, all right, I don't want to break the bank on everything. I have a boat. I want to go ice fishing, pull it back and forth. Perfect option.
Yep.
If you're just looking for doing more ice fishing, which I'm into right now, and obviously don't have a boat and don't have a time during the summer because I'm lucky I can sit down and eat a meal during the summertime, that Vexlar is, I'd recommend a Vexlar 10 times over.
Yeah, and we're hoping to get way deep in the weeds. We want to get Waldo on one of these days.
I'm hoping so.
Yep. To get way into Vexlar stuff, because there's a lot of stuff that even I don't understand. But years ago, oh man, it had to be probably 8 years ago now, I was able to go out fish deep water in Devil's Lake. We were fishing like 40 feet plus, 50 foot for perch, and the FLX 20, I don't know if the 28 was out. The 20 was out. The Helix units had just come out. And the Markham LX 7 was there brand new. And I had all three of them on the ice side by side, did a comparison. It's on beavertailbait.com. Yeah, in our blog yep. thing. And I would change things a little bit. So I gave grades on it, and I gave the Helix probably the best overall because it was so versatile. And it had the GPS. Still true.
Yep.
But I've got GPS on my phone now.
And that's the other thing.
Yep, that wasn't as prevalent back then. They didn't have, like, they may have had avionics, but it wasn't what it is today. And it wasn't, you know, most people didn't have it. So now I've got it on my phone two different ways. I've got one boat, I've got an avionics. I've got it on my Garmin, which I'm bringing with. I still want a flasher. I would have to say that I downgrade my Markham a little bit more than I did before, just based on how good the Vexilar is at just being durable. I could run that sucker over with my snow dog, give you the parts, and you could probably fish with it that day.
Yep.
That being said, side by side, the Markham gives a lot better detail. As long as you're careful with it, I think it's a more precise machine. They have the finest lines at depth. You can tell differences in sizes of fish and baits better by a long ways than a Vexilar, but you have to be very much more careful with them. The Vexilar is going to show you the same fish, but a lot of times they're just known for being, they're more blobby. Your marks are bigger, thicker, wider, and they've got a little bit more of a, like a halo to them, and you can't tell things apart. And again, we'll get into the weeds with them because maybe there's ways to make that more simple.
Yep.
And I know they're 30 BB. There's guys at a much higher level that were fishing NAIFC and UPL and tournament fishing using the Vexilar specifically because of zero lag and detail that maybe I'm missing. So I want to learn more about that yet, but sometimes I can't stand it looking at the big blobs of my Vexilar, but that's the one I grab because I know like it's working and this is the bottom. This is a fish. This is a bait. Like it's just very dependable. It's a very dependable unit.
And that's going back on the Vexilar or the Helix stance on it. That's the reason I bought mine too, because I had the Lake Master and everything else. I actually went through the Wisconsin chip in it and I had the mapping and doing everything else. But I'm doing all that research on my phone.
Yep.
When I'm sitting in my recliner at night.
Yeah, you're not bringing your unit I don't up want and setting it on your lap and
doing everything. And then especially with, if you have a steel roof on, it's not going to be able to grab your GPS in there. I mean, it's, the mapping's nice with the one boat network. If you were doing it for a boat stance, absolutely. You could do that because you can connect your phone maps to your unit and everything else. It'd be fine. But I'm just more comfortable with Vexilar. I want to go back to a traditional flasher.
Yeah. And I use it all the time. I had a group of guys that came through and, that was about a week ago now. And they were definitely knew what they were doing. Everybody brought their own live scope and they wanted to, you know, potentially do a little run and gun or, you know, kind of chasing stuff. And they're like, oh, we all got a live scope. We'll bounce around with live scopes. And they did, but it is just much clunkier. It's a much more difficult system. And there's just a lot to it at this point. I think at some point we're going to see like some sort of remote or I don't know how they're going to do it, but being able to separate the screen from the pole is going to happen some point in the future. Something like that'll be the next step. What I predict. And then it'll be easier to do more of a hole hopping thing because you'll be able to stand in one spot, send somebody around with the deucer and check everything in an area from one area. But to try and hole hop with a live scope is kind of crazy. Where you still need a sonar. And I just think that they're much more true too, because people will always look at mine and be like, oh, it's 32 feet here. I'm like, I don't give that any credit whatsoever when I'm in forward mode with a live scope, because if I turn to the left, it's only 26. And if I turn back, it looks like it's 15.
Right.
Because you're reading at an angle in forward. Now, down mode's usually pretty true, But still, if I want to get the depth, if I'm setting a tip up, I'm probably, unless I'm in down mode, actually setting it underneath it, I'm using a sonar because it's just quick. It's one knob, turn it on. You don't have to go through menus. Which is another thing with the Helix, can be kind of a pain to switch anything. It's not touchscreen, and it's five different clicks and pushes over and everything just to mess with your gain.
Right.
It a lot of little nuance to it. Now, that being said, I got that. I talked about getting the Gens box and the setup for my 9 this year.
Yep.
And I've kind of liked it as an extra unit.
Okay.
Just being able to use that boat one that I've already got, that I'm going to put back on my boat for side imaging and everything. Being able to use that during the winter, it kind of is a nice display. Definitely a little bit of lag, not bad, but definitely a touch of lag.
Right.
Just a touch.
The thing with my Helix, too, that I've ran into is that I'll go hole hopping.
Yep.
Go and drop down, and I just sit there and wait. And there's sometimes where I'll wait 30 seconds to a minute, and I haven't brought up bottom, haven't brought up this, nothing's going. It's reading 0.1 foot. It's going, doing all kinds of other stuff. There's times I've had to shut my unit off, restart it up, go through all this stuff to get back to my actual flasher, and then all of a sudden it reads. I'm like, at that point in time, especially if you were just trying to hunt for fish at the time, well, there could have been something below me, and I don't know it.
Now, I'm 90% sure that you can go in and set it to a manual and get close to the depth.
Yep.
Because you have the same problem if you put your, like I've got an FLX 28, if I put it in auto, it's not as bad as Hummingbird for the delay. But we were using a basin chasing an auto a little bit today because my bottom was going anywhere from 58 feet to 25.
Yep.
Anywhere in there. So I'd have them put it on auto and we'd do the whole, okay, there's a school. I'd step it off. I'd wait for him to get over to me. I'd drill the hole. We'd set the Vexilar in and wait for it to find bottom while the crappies left.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, we're going to set this at 30. At least we'll be able to see the fish. And we can always adjust it to 40 or 80, 40 or 60, I think it is, later on.
Right.
So I think you can do that with a Helix, but just the fact that you have to do it.
Right.
And it's not really all that evident. I think it's in a setting somewhere. That was one of the biggest things that did frustrate with me with the Helix too, is just the wait.
The lag on just waiting and waiting and waiting. I got everything else dialed in on this thing how I want. I got my color configuration because I think there's, I don't know how many color configurations for your actual 2D for your flasher. You can set to this, whatever your preferences you like. I'm like, okay, that's kind of nice. I got to set the ones I like and everything else, which is actually damn near exactly what a Vexilar is, because that's what I grew up on. That's what
you're used to. Yeah.
And just like you said, adjusting gain. For me to be able to go and adjust gain, I think it's 3 to 5 clicks I got to do to be able to turn my gain down and then go with it. I will say with running a Vexilar next to a Helix and a Shack for interference, there is none.
Yeah, they're pretty good. You're pretty able to knock them out. The only one...
And even Helix next to Helix inside a Shack doing it, you really don't have much interference coming across everything.
The only machine that gets tough where you got to do IR a lot and mix up is when you go mark them, because they put a lot more power in the water. Which again is another, and we're getting into the weeds a little bit on sonars, but that's another pro. That's something that I've talked about this year, being able to run low power mode on Vexilar, where Markham, part of their deal is they've got a crisp, clear display because of how much power they put in the water. But is it a good thing? When I'm clicking like a Markham M1, so they're, entry level machine. Just in my house, I can hear it clicking off a wall at 20 feet.
Right.
Coming back to my ear. Like, there's a lot of power there. And it makes a crisp, clear color, fine line. Love all that. but definitely puts a lot of power in the water. And that's what we start talking about with when we get into forward facing.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. I mean, you look at it. I mean, we've had guests on here saying that they've done fish drives with forward facing, just turning them and pushing them back to people because of the amount of power that they're putting out into the water. I mean, you're getting a good, crisp, clear image out of Markham, but...
Yeah, and that's what my understanding of, like, the 30 BB in Vexilar is that you can kind of use frequency and gain and tune it in to get the lowest amount of power where you can still see your jig.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I am not using everything on the FLX28 that I can because I've got gain at zero in normal mode, and my jig still looks like a house some days. And then if I'm in low power, gain at like three, starting to see it. There's a lot more playing around that you can do, and I've got to learn the ins and outs. The simplicity of a Vexilar is three buttons or three knobs.
Knobs, even. Correct.
The difficulty is three knobs. They've got a heck of a lot of features in the 30.
Yes.
For three knobs. So something we got to dive into. We both, I think, want to learn a little bit more about.
Absolutely. There's stuff about that. Like, I was very up to date on Vexilar stuff back when they were just the FL series. I haven't dabbled much into when they got into the FLX series of their locators. So it's a whole different world for me, which I would love to be able to learn and be able to figure out just to be able, the limited time I'm able to be able to get on ice, be able to put it to its full potential and know what I'm doing, which would be great. It'd be nice to be able to do a segment with that, to be able to just figure out what the hell and have, especially a guy that comes off of, like you said, a Markham M1 or the old FL series of Vexilars and looking at upgrading and making sure it's what they want to get into.
Mm-hmm. Even looking back at, you know, if you're just getting in, like my dad was just, he's online auction guy like crazy.
Oh, yes, he is.
So he was just looking at FL8 models and the difference between the SLT and the SL or the SE.
Okay.
Being a little bit newer model of FL8.
Yes.
Which is all he needs. And that's what, honestly, most of the time, all you need.
Right.
All the rest is just kind of getting you closer and closer. Right.
And it's what you're accustomed to in your fishing style and stuff like that. And if you're able to handle it. I mean, when my dad bought his FL20, it's not even, it wasn't Maui one. Maui wanted was like the FL12 or the FL8 or something like that.
Yep.
But what they had was the FL20 and the Pro Pack with the upgraded transducer and everything else. It's like, this is more in a unit that I'm even, or, you know, I had to show him yesterday or yesterday that he had a 20 foot power or 20 foot low power mode on his.
Oh, nice.
I go, do you have a low power mode on that? He goes, no. And I'm like, well, go grab it. I go, yeah, click left. Don't click right when you're going into your depth ranges.
Oh, so you get the shallow and the deep.
Yeah. So I go, well, even just sitting in a case on the table, I go, all right, here's 20 foot regular power. See how you got all the green and everything else in here and it's picking up everything else? He goes, yeah. I went and clicked it over to the low power mode. I'm like, see how you don't have all the interference and everything else? And we're sitting right here. He goes, I've had this thing for 12 years or whatever now, and I never knew that. I'm like, I thought I told you this before, but evidently I didn't.
Speaking of, one tip that if anybody's gotten into this situation will come really in handy, but it's probably pretty rare. All of a sudden, I turned on my unit, I start fishing, and I look down, and I'm at 12 meters deep. Yeah.
How the hell did you get into that?
It's pretty easy to mess up because if you have your gain at full and you push the button on startup, it'll switch units.
Oh.
It's all, if your button's just twisted and you push it in when you're starting up. It seems like an odd combination, but it, you know, it's easy enough to get it spun all the way the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So all you got to do is be tapping the button when it starts up and you'll switch from metric to US. It's really easy to go back the other way then too, but right. You're probably gonna have to do a Google search otherwise. So yeah, you just turn it all the way to 9, hold the button in on startup, and it'll switch the units back. Because there's no, I mean, you look through all the functions, everything it says on the unit itself, all the things that you could change, weed mode and all that. Yeah, they're not going to change your units. You're going to be at 1.7 meters trying to fish for bluegills shallow. it hurts your head a little bit.
I can imagine.
Oh, man. What a season so far, though. We're just like, oh, man. From big perch getting into walleyes, more big pike than I've ever seen in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Good gills, too, because of some of the lakes that we've gotten. And you and I have both gotten over 9.5-inch gill this year.
Yeah.
No 10s between the two of us. I've seen a couple 10s.
I have also.
But just really, really cool year to be out. And awesome to be over here in this particular. We're northwestern Wisconsin, but even like more northwestern than us had worse ice. We kind of had a little pocket here.
Yeah.
The last 2 years, I've been able to get out.
The last 2 years, we've gotten pretty lucky with the ice we have been able to have. I mean, last year we were fighting with slush a lot.
But our slush was not like, if you went to Hayward, they were telling you, the guides were telling you, go home.
Right, exactly.
Where we were getting out and not getting wet most days.
Right.
This year, we've had areas of ice. You had to have a little bit of wisdom in a spud bar.
Yep.
Just a little bit. You just couldn't go. And I talked to a lot of first-time ice walkers this year, and the biggest thing that I saw was there was a lot of, like, as soon as we got a little bit of snow, people got real, real bold. When it was black ice with cracks in it, people were sticking to the shorelines and real close. As soon as that ice got a little bit of snow, they're willing to venture out on it wherever they wanted to.
Yep, they thought it was safe.
Yep, false sense of security. So that's been a little bit crazy to get through. It's just been the fish bite, I think, because of the weather up until now.
Right.
Has been like first ice over and over and over again.
Yeah, like we said, it's like fourth first ice. If you were able to get on and find fish, it was great. I mean, even talking back to goals, I mean, I broke my goal and I set it low this year because I didn't know what I was going to get out. I picked an 8-inch bluegill. I blew that out of the water. I got my 9.25, 9.5. So I didn't break the 10 mark, but I got some damn nice gills. Another goal that I set for myself that I didn't talk about is for cooking on the ice. I wanted to get my pizza oven on the ice. It didn't happen this year. It will happen next year. Hopefully, I should say that. Because I want to do that. I mean, it'd be nice for a big group of just doing wood fire pizzas out there to be able to get done.
Oh, it'd be cool.
I mean, and going on with cooking for it, I mean, I cooked the 2 days we were out there. I mean,
yeah, you cooked when I was out there.
Yeah, we just the cheap $25. I mean, I talk a lot of good recipes on here and they're kind of complex and be able to do, but even just going back to your basics of grabbing a grill and grabbing some brats and throw them on there, it was fine.
So I started doing brats and I started cooking on my heater because I bought a grill, got the Cabela's stainless. It's a great grill. It doesn't hold up to a beating of slush and pulling behind a snow dog, bouncing over stuff all year. Just didn't hold up.
Okay.
Stuff started falling apart. Stuff started breaking off of it. I had to trash it after a year of beating it, basically, which was a bummer. This year, I'm like, I'm already bringing my heater out. The heaters, buddy heaters have their issues. I've got one that's fairly new that needs a new, like, thermocoupler.
Yep.
but they're fairly durable.
Yes, they are.
They're made to be in a sled, and I'm already bringing it out, so it's not an extra thing. So, cooking over it. You do not want to cook greasy stuff over your heater. It will cause a lot of flare-ups. It'll make your port really dirty.
Correct.
So, the easiest thing I've found is whether you make them yourself, if you do your own venison, or I actually still got to do my venison this year. I got it frozen.
Yeah, Dad and I have to do ours yet, too. Yep.
So we got to cut ours up and do it. So found a local, we've got a local spot that does a lot of meat. I get their hot dogs and actually their cheese dogs. And all you got to do is basically heat them up. Pre-cooked.
Yep.
So like throw a heater on high. I take the grate off and turn it upside down. Use kind of that trick.
See, I did the same thing, but I did, instead of taking the grate off, I bought one of the paint trays.
Yep, I did the paint, yeah. Yeah, I started out doing a paint tray, and that hack works awesome. I think I mentioned
For the bigger heater, I have a smaller heater than you.
Yeah.
The 5-gallon grill or paint grate is too big for mine.
Yes,
so I had
it is.
To bend my tabs in. And then you don't have the support on the front end. So I ended up having to take my aluminum handled ice scoop with the plastic scoop, weave it in there and stick the plastic scoop at the bottom. And I kept it up. What I think I'm going to do with that is that take a metal coat hanger, bend around the front so it can still move.
Okay, make a little kickstand.
Yep, and then make a kickstand with a 90 and another 90 to be able to hook onto the grate to be able to hold it up. That would work great because I did the same thing. I picked up a white Kidder brats from Clements from our local Quick Trip. They were on 2 for $8 that I just did that and threw them on there, and they turned out awesome.
See, and the brats, so they do decent. Brats get greasy. That's why I do the hot dogs, just because you warm them up until the cheese starts just starting to squirt out a little bit on one of them or two of them, and you shut it right down. You don't get all the grease all over, because my wife wanted to do brats this last time. We took out the whole family. I thought the day before I was going to go out with like my nephew, my son, my brother-in-law, and I turned into both of our full families.
Mm.
And just me knowing anything. And, the girls wanted brats, all that stuff, brand new heater. What a mess.
I can imagine.
And they were sauerkraut brats, and oh, if you do something, dogs, steaks, something a little bit drier, maybe got to keep your eye on them a little bit so they don't burn, but you can cook them really fast and just warm them up, have nice hot food, throw a little ketchup on it, makes it so they don't, so they're not maybe so dry. Because that's the only thing with that sort of stuff is it is a little bit more dry on a heater. But keeps your stuff way cleaner. Because you do brats on a heater, even with a paint tray, you're going to have some nasty grease on your pilot when you're done.
The last time when we went out, it was just blowing. I was going to cook on
the outside. It was nasty. Yeah.
I was going to cook on the outside of the shack just on the backside of it to be able to keep the wind out of it and everything else. And my dad goes, "No, you just want to cook inside the shack?" I'm like, "Well, I can. This thing's going to smoke a ton." He goes, "Well, it's better than cooking out in the wind out there." I'm like, "Well, that's a good point." We had the doors open, the wind open. It looks like Cheech and Chong were smoking out on the ice. It was terrible. I laugh about it now, but it was like my eyes were watering. That's how much smoke was in there.
Now, does your Freibel have the windows that come down?
My windows for my Freibel have not made it to my Freibel yet.
Okay.
So you can completely take them out? Because I literally got on the ice yesterday and was setting it up. And I go, "Son of a bitch." My dad goes, "What, did you miss one?" I'm like, "No, I forgot the damn windows again." And it was a cold, overcast day yesterday. So I'm like, "Oh, this is going to be cool." He goes, "What, did you bring a light with?" I go, "Why the hell would I do that? I'm fishing during the day." we had them opened up. So I fired up my grill that was either off or the surface of the sun, and then brat patties. So we did.
There's some smoke.
Oh yeah. Brat patties. We got them done up, threw the raw onion on there and threw pepper jack cheese on top of it.
Ooh.
To melt everything down. Yeah. You want to talk about the smoke rolling out of there? I had my dog with that day too, and he was hanging out inside the shack with us. And even he was sitting there nudging me. You're like, dude, you want to let me out of this? And he's down by the ice. He's like, dude, this is terrible. I let him out, and he's sitting there shaking his head. He's like, what are you doing to me out here? I'm like, hey, you wanted to come. You wouldn't let me out of the house without you.
That's funny. Yeah, definitely choose your on ice food appropriately.
Yeah. And your cooking conditions, if you can help it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's I've done the brats inside the shack, but I do them right over an open window, and it's been all right. It's worked like a smokestack and come on out. But yeah, no, like I said, when I was coming off today in a full moon, I don't know if I said it here, if I was just talking to you, Luke, earlier. There's a full bright moon tonight. So it was the 24th. And I'm coming off the ice. We stayed late for walleyes. We had one flag, and he pulled it out about 2 feet and dropped it. Slow night. And purple sunset on the left, moon coming up brighter than heck on the right. And I'm like, you know what? It's still February, but if this is my last night out on the ice, it's been a good season.
Yeah.
I could take it. My body's beat up because I haven't been able to get. It's so much easier to guide out of a truck. Not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Just pull up and you pull out whatever they need, whatever you need right from your truck. You put it back in. You can keep it. This year, everything off the machine, and you can't just drive over to an area and start popping holes. You gotta.
If you're walk lucky enough to have the machine out there,
right. Yeah, it's been a lot of work. Body's beat up. Like I said, we've been super fortunate where, other than a couple days after Christmas, I've been on ice pretty much since Christmas, since before Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's been a tough one, and it's been a lot of great memories. We talked to so many people this year, and over again we said it's not about the fish.
No, it's not. It's about getting out there.
Even the other day, we got to see some really cool fish caught. I just barely remember parts of, like, the fish themselves. It's just about the time that we got out to get on the ice, what, two or three times this year?
Yeah.
Three times. Which is, as much as you got out on the ice last year, we got to fish together.
Yeah, and you and I usually don't get to fish together but once.
Right.
Usually during the season.
Right. And that, usually I fish with your dad a whole lot more than you, and that was the first time we got out with him. So.
Yep.
But no, getting to see him catch some big fish and be out on the ice with you guys and do that a little bit different, definitely one a year from the memory books. Everything from, you know, people from out of town, people falling on glare ice.
Yeah.
Just getting some big perch, getting fish in different areas, getting to fish a lot with my son. Been a really cool year and just a ton of memories made.
Yeah, it's been a fun season. Hopefully we still have a couple more outings coming here, but if it's last for both of us, it'd be for all things considering how this weather's been going, we got more than what we expected this year, to say the least.
Yeah, more than maybe what we deserved. So many people haven't had an ice season. They've had to go north, or they've had to get the boat back out, and we've been fishing like crazy, and the fish have been biting to where we're hitting a midwinter lull the end of February.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, we definitely have another episode coming out yet. And we'll probably talk a little bit about our lull and what we're, you know, hopefully we get back on ice a little bit more.
Hopefully.
And we can talk a little bit about how we've gotten through it, what we've done, how we've adapted to how the ice has worked, because I didn't know if we'd get a midwinter lull because the ice is so thin. But I think no matter what, the fish have been in cold water. The water temperature really doesn't change that much, even if it's 55 outside all winter. It's still 39 to 41 down there all year. And now they've been sitting there for 2 months at that temp.
Right.
So they're starting to get sick of it. But yeah. Gonna be setting up an email. We've got one that we can't get into.
Yeah.
So we're gonna be getting you some information on Facebook with our new email. We want you to send in any questions there. Always hit us up on Facebook for sure.
Yep.
And we love input. We've talked to so many people this year, way more than ever before, that have listened to us quite a bit. We've grown a ton, which is all you guys, and we're still sorry.
Yeah, we're sorry.
We think we've really grown a lot as far as the sound quality and put a lot more into it, trying to figure that part of it out, give you a good quality product, get you some good guests in here. We've had a good year for that. Thank you to everybody that's come on so far. We hope we get a little bit more out of this season yet. But otherwise, Luke, unless you've got anything else to offer, thank you for listening to iStop.